Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
All right, please be informed that the time shown on the clock is your total time remaining.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right.
Mr. Morris appeals his criminal conviction raising constitutional claims under the Fourth and Sixth Amendments to the United States Constitution, which this court reviews de novo. Mr. Morris's first claim is a speedy trial violation. Mr. Morris, under the Doggett versus United States four-factor balancing test, Mr. Morris respectfully contends the court should reverse the district court. The first factor, the length of the delay, has been conceded by the government that the 21-month delay in this case has exceeded the threshold 1 year to establish the presumption of prejudice. The second factor to consider is the reasons for the delay. And here the government bears the burden to justify and explain that pretrial delay. The first period of delay, and the bulk of it in this case, was from the February 19th, 2015 indictment until the March 18th, 2016 arraignment of Mr. Morris in federal court.
Where was Mr. Morris during that time?
Thank you, Your Honor. To begin with, Mr. Morris was originally arrested and held in state custody until the 6th of February when he posted bond.
And then what happened?
And then Mr. Morris absconded from the pretrial. He did not show up for his arraignment.
So how should that be attributed to the government?
Thank you, Your Honor. Because Mr. Morris, during that period of time until the April 10th date that he was remanded into custody, had no knowledge of the federal indictment in this case.
And if we don't agree with you, counsel, what you're saying is he absconded from the state charges, not from the federal charges.
That's correct, Your
Honor. If I don't find that persuasive, what's your next best argument?
Well, Your Honor,
about this, the next period of time for the prosecution?
Sure.
Okay, is that the next chunk?
Yes. It would be from when Mr. Morris was remanded into custody on April 15th. At that time, there was a federal warrant for his arrest in connection with originally the complaint and later the indictment. That warrant actually predates the state's warrant, and because the state had released Mr. Morris on this pretrial release, I would submit that they had relinquished its primary jurisdiction over Mr. Morris.
Okay, and so counsel, for this middle, since your time is ticking, is the middle chunk 11 months, or how do you measure it?
I would measure it, Your Honor, from April of 2015 until March of 2016,
okay.
Which is...
Okay, so we measured it the
11.
Same way.
That's correct.
Okay, so that's good. So on that question, again, trying to just look at your time here, do we have a controlling authority about what we do with the period of time attributable to the state prosecution?
Yes, Your Honor. Because the government is required to justify its delay, the court needs to look at the reasons it's asserted that it was going to defer to the state prosecution. And in this case...
What case says that?
Pardon me?
What case says that?
The government's burden to
The reason that we have to look at the reasons for deferring to the state prosecution. What case says that we look at that?
Sure. Thank you, Your Honor. Under, just one moment. In the Fourth and Sixth Circuits, I believe the...
How about the Ninth Circuit?
There is, that issue has not been decided yet in the Ninth Circuit. So we do have a split in the circuits. The Fourth and Sixth Circuits have found that the parallel prosecution in state court is a sufficient reason in itself to justify the delay by the government.
What should we do?
In this case, Your Honor, you should require that and follow the Tenth and Third Circuits that find that that's not sufficient, and that the parallel prosecution itself is not sufficient, because the state had relinquished its primary jurisdiction over the case, and because in the cases...
By issuing a warrant for his arrest?
You're saying... Your Honor, by permitting the defendant to be released on pretrial conditions. Mm-hmm. And under the Fourth and Sixth Circuits, where they do state that there's sufficient, that just the parallel prosecution is enough, mm-hmm. when we look specifically at those cases, all of the state court proceedings that the federal government was permitted to defer to involves more serious charges than that which the defendant faced in the federal courts.
So, counsel, if we disagree with you on that argument, do you lose?
Well, Your Honor, given the severity of the penalties in connection with the federal court case, him facing 15-year mandatory minimum to life versus the state court proceedings where he was facing 0 to 20, 2 to 10 years, based out of the exact same transaction, I think that the court should conclude.
But if we disagree with you, if we don't conclude the way you want us to, do you lose?
No, Your Honor. I believe that even if, pardon me?
I didn't say anything.
I believe that even if the court finds that the court should still find that the government hasn't been able to justify any delay whatsoever. And Mr. Morris was prejudiced by this.
What was the prejudice?
Thank you, Your Honor. First, he lost two legal defenses, primarily that he lost the opportunity to submit a successful pretrial motion to suppress. Had he been arraigned in a timely fashion and assigned counsel, he could have asked the federal court to suppress evidence resulting from the search warrant. And that's based
on... Well, he brought that motion.
No, Your Honor, a different motion. This is a motion based on the state agent executing a search warrant. And at this period of time, from the indictment until the arraignment, there was no documentation of the search warrant to justify the search of Mr. Morris's vehicle. And because under Montana state law, we have a heightened right to privacy, which disallows the automobile exception to the warrant requirement that we would find otherwise in federal law, there was no, had Mr. Morris been appointed counsel and submitted that suppression motion, there was no existing search warrant that was in the government's possession.
Because they had complied with, they hadn't returned it. They didn't realize that the officer still had it.
Yes, and Your Honor, the defendant was under the impression and testified that the reason that the state had abandoned its possession with intent to distribute charges was because there was no search warrant filed. And the search warrant documents that are in the excerpts of record themselves show that they were not returned to the state district court until March of 2016. So we have a legal...
Well, I mean, hypothetically, if he had known and brought the motion to suppress, they probably would have found the warrant and returned it. I mean, it wasn't lost. It was just hadn't been returned due to some sort of oversight.
I understand, Your
Honor.
Well,
in the state court, but the state court charges were dismissed because of the missing warrant, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Do we have that? Do you have the ER site for that?
Yes, Your Honor.
And when I say the state charges, the state possession charges.
That's correct, Your Honor. If we were to look at excerpts of record 209, that will show the state criminal docket. In the middle of that page, it will show criminal possession with intent to distribute. And then there's a list of amended charges. And in the amendments...
I think you've answered my question, and I don't want to take you too far afield because
Your
time is ticking. I thought you had another prejudice argument going to the video, and that one I don't understand because I didn't see any place in the record where you showed us that the video was ever successfully captured, just that it was missing, and I don't know how to attribute the missing video to the delay.
Thank you, Your Honor. The issue with the delayed distribution or disclosure of the video is twofold. First, there's a Miranda waiver that was produced in this case where the officer testified that instead of having the defendant sign the Miranda waiver, he instead wrote on video. The agent did that, assuming that the audio had accurately recorded the conversations among the defendant. And so without that recording, we were our hands were tied in effectively cross-examining
the
officer.
Aren't we left to speculate about what that would have shown, or is there something from your client verifying that or maintaining that something was really lost?
Your Honor, I think that this is one of those situations where we both have to speculate because there's some things that we can't prove without knowing what time would have told otherwise. But also because we have that Miranda form itself, there's actual evidence that there's a question as to the validity of the Miranda waiver in this case, which we were not able to challenge on at that hearing. I'll reserve the rest of my time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll hear from the government.
May it please the court. My name is Tom Bartleson. I'm an AUSA in Helena, Montana. And I'd like to begin with a question I believe was raised by Judge Christian regarding why it was reasonable for the prosecution to initially be done in the state court. And there's several reasons for that. First is that the state prosecution was initiated first after Mr. Morris's arrest. Secondly, the state had a great interest in prosecuting the case. This was the case of a wrong-way driver on Interstate 90 in the middle of winter in Montana, and they had significant penalties.
Just to be clear, I think you're answering a question I didn't ask.
I apologize.
Not at all. But what I was asking for is, do we have authority about what we should do with that period of delay? I think it's about 11 months attributed to the decision to let the state case go forward, just whether we have controlling authority. And I think opposing counsel clarified we do not.
Okay. We do not in the Ninth Circuit. It's
right.
True.
Right.
However,
that's
there are
that's the
a
controlling
number.
Part of the word. That's yeah. Right. As Judge Rawlinson pointed out, we recognize there's a split.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
However, a number of different circuits have said that it's reasonable to allow a different sovereign to proceed with charges first.
Counsel, what about the argument that, the prejudice argument, that because this warrant had not been returned for a very extended period of time, that the defendant otherwise could have brought a motion to dismiss, and in fact, he did that successfully in the state court?
He did, Your Honor. However, that still doesn't rise to the level of prejudice in the federal case, and the district court below looked at that and found no prejudice to the defendant.
So why should we agree?
You should agree because after analyzing the four factors under Barker and Doggett, the facts haven't changed, and the district court below.
So the first factor, there's this, the opposing counsel's right, that the delay is such that the presumption is triggered, right?
Yes.
And so when we go through the other factors, one of them is we're looking at prejudice resulting from this delay.
Right.
And his argument, as I understand it, is that I think it's 11-month period attributable to the state prosecution was prejudicial because he wasn't able to bring a successful motion to dismiss in the federal action.
Yes.
And we know that was prejudicial because he was able to bring, that's his argument, he was able to bring it in the state court successfully. So what is your response?
If I understand your question, Your Honor, that was analyzed by the district court below who found there was no prejudice.
Yes, counsel, but now they're on appeal, and she's asking us to revisit that. And so my question for you is, why shouldn't we find it prejudicial?
You shouldn't find it prejudicial, Your Honor, because the three reasons that they look for prejudice weren't found, and they aren't shown by any prejudice in the three factors to the defendant. So there wasn't oppressive pretrial incarceration. There wasn't prejudice to the defense. The discovery that they did initially wait for was provided. They were able to be represented by counsel after the initiation of the federal charges and arraignment. They did make a number of motions, which were denied in the district court below. And so those findings of the district court should be affirmed here. So, again, Your Honor, a number of circuits have looked at the four factors in cases where the delay was much greater than it was in this case. Among those, the Fourth Circuit, the Sixth Circuit, and the Seventh Circuit, all of whom said that it was a good reason for delay where a custodial sovereign has possession of the defendant first, as it was in this case.
Right. Thank you. Is there any comparable case where there's been a parallel state proceeding and the delay resulted as it did this? We can see that there was a successful motion to suppress on the state side.
I haven't seen those facts, Your Honor.
I haven't either. I think it's an interesting question. Thank you, counsel.
Yes. The court here should find that the rationale under these cases, Richardson, Shreen, and Thomas, should be followed here, that it was a good reason or a valid reason for the delay to allow the state proceedings to go first. The state of Montana was the custodial sovereign, and the findings of the district court should be affirmed. If there are no further questions on that issue, I'd like to briefly speak about the second issue.
All right.
With regard to the search warrant question, the district court below conducted an extensive hearing over 2 days with a number of witnesses, made factual determinations regarding whether or not there were issues with the search warrant, which were inaccurate, and made those questions, made those changes to the search warrant. And despite the changes that she made, still found that within the bounds of the search warrant document and the affidavit, probable cause to search remained. And so this court should affirm those findings as well. Specifically, that due to the facts which were found at the scene, that we had a number of indications that this was not someone who was just a user of drugs, but this was someone who was actively involved in drug trafficking. Specifically, there were reports of him being involved in trafficking from the Bakken oil fields in North Dakota through Billings to California and back, which were recent reports. And there were a number of air fresheners, as well as a past history of being arrested multiple times and convicted twice for drug offenses. Even with changes made to the search warrant document, those should be found by this court to be sufficient for there to be probable cause to search. And if there are no further questions from the court, I'd like to yield the rest of my time.
It appears not. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Rebuttal.
I'd like to make one clarification, Your Honor. There was no motion to suppress in the state court, but there was a motion to amend the information, and that amended information.
I misspoke. You're right. I thought about that, and then I thought it was more trouble to correct myself. But the state charges went away, the possession charges, because. But that's kind of begging the question. Usually when we talk about prejudice for a delay, and forgive me for that misstatement, please. Typically, when we talk about a prejudice resulting from a delay, we're talking about lost evidence or a witness has died or a witness is, we can't locate the witness or something like that. But here, it may well be that the state case was prolonged precisely because they couldn't find that warrant. And I've never seen a case where that the cause of the delay then becomes the basis for the kind of motion you're making here. In other words, it's not the contention that the warrant was, you've got a separate Franks issue about whether the warrant was infirm. But in a way, what you're saying is, because if the warrant had been present, you would be left just with the Franks issue, right? But you're saying not that there would have been sort of a just reason, just but it would have been a happenstance because they couldn't find the warrant. Right, if they had gone forward, then I would have been able to bring, that's his argument, I would have been able to bring a motion since you wouldn't have been able to find the warrant.
That's correct.
Yes, then he would have been able to benefit from it. It seems like a windfall that's bootstrapping in a way that I just haven't seen in any other case.
Your Honor, I would respectfully submit that it's a tactical advantage that the government gained and by sitting on this federal prosecution.
How did they gain the advantage? They had the warrant, they just couldn't find it. So what advantage did they gain that would be comparable to a lost witness or something where you really couldn't put folks back on a level playing field where the case could be tried on its merits?
Well, for example, in the Montana Supreme Court case, State versus Couture, there the state conceded that the warrant documentation was totally lost. Perhaps that it could have been found after the order from the district court, but at the time that the issue was raised, there was no documentation for it. And because in Montana, a prerequisite to a search of a vehicle requires there be a search warrant to justify it, and there weren't no such documentation, Mr. Morris could have successfully suppressed that. And that is a legal.
But there was a warrant, and they found the warrant when they needed the warrant, and then you go on to your argument that the warrant was deficient. So again, you're assuming that had he raised this during that period while he was under state prosecution, no one would have made an effort at that point to go find the warrant. When they needed to, they did.
Given that there was an ongoing state prosecution where that possession with intent to distribute charge was subsequently dismissed, according to Mr. Morris's testimony, because there was no warrant, I think that does demonstrate that the absence of the warrant at that time afforded him a viable and successful defense to the charge.
But counsel, here's what I'm getting at. I think my concern is just a little bit different, I think. And maybe here's my concern. This is the prejudice you're arguing about is different in this way. Once they found the warrant, then your client had the ability to attack it. In other words, it was the kind of error where people could be and were, I think, put back in the position they would have been if the error hadn't been made in the first place. So your client, in that sense, had all of his rights restored, all of his ability to challenge was sort of put back on a level playing field, as opposed to the warrant having been truly lost forever. And I don't know of any comparable case.
I don't either, Your Honor. But I would also note that not only did he suffer prejudice in that failure to be able to submit the motion to suppress, right, but he lost the opportunity to file a motion to dismiss under Montana law for the dual prosecutions arising out of the same transaction. And because there was the corrupt audio file and no way to determine whether, had the case proceeded earlier, there was an uncorrupt version of that, he really lost the opportunity to challenge a lot of the issues that came up in the search warrant issue, where Officer Huertas is testifying that Mr. Morris told him X, Y, and Z. And since we've seen in our briefing how many obvious and misstatements with reckless disregard to the truth that officer made, that video and audio recording, I think, is really critical in Mr. Morris's case to being able to cross-examine that officer and to demonstrate and prove that those omissions were truly material. And just on that issue, the canine, I think fact that the United States versus Perkins has recently cited with favor the United States versus Jacobs Eighth Circuit case on the canine sniff also demands reversal on that issue.
All right, thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel. The case just argued is submitted for decision by the court.